the length blonde hair, curled with irons, wearing a doublet the colour of red wine and a shirt with a lace ruffle. Along with his ever-present lute, and with that ever-present insolent smile on his lips.
"Greetings, Witcher. What do you look like with that smashed-up fizzog? I'll split my sides laughing."
"Greetings, Dandelion. I'm pleased to see you too."
"What's going on here?" The man with the noble looks stood with arms akimbo.
"Well, what are you up to? Standard report, this moment."
"It was him."
The Commandant shook the last of the sauce from her ears and pointed accusingly at Geralt.
"He's guilty, Honourable Instigator. He lost his temper and stirred up a row and then began brawling. And all because of some swords in the deposit, what he hasn't got a docket for. Gonskirk will confirm." "Hey, Gonskirk, what are you doing curled up in the corner? Shat yourself? Move your arse, get up, tell the Honourable Instigator. Hey, Gonskirk, what ails you?"
A close look was enough to guess what ailed him. There was no need to check his pulse. It sufficed to look at his chalky white face. Gonskirk was dead. He had, quite simply, deceased.
"We will institute an investigation, Lord Rivia," said Ferrand de Lettenhover, instigator of the Royal Tribunal. "Since you are lodging a formal complaint and appeal, we must institute one. The law so decrees. We shall interrogate everyone who, during your arrest and trial, had access to your effects."
"We shall arrest any suspects."
"The usual ones."
"I beg your pardon."
"Nothing, nothing."
"Indeed.
The matter will certainly be explained, and those guilty of the theft of the swords will be brought to justice, if a theft was really committed. I promise that we shall solve the mystery, and the truth will out, sooner or later."
"I'd rather it was sooner."
The Witcher didn't care too much for the instigator's tone of voice.
"My swords are my existence. I can't do my job without them. I know my profession is adversely perceived by many, and that I suffer as a result of this negative portrayal, caused by prejudice, superstition, and xenophobia. I hope that fact won't influence the investigation."
"It won't," replied Ferrand de Lettenhover dryly, "since law and order prevail here."
After the servants had carried Gonskarek's body out, the instigator ordered a search of the weapons store and the entire cubbyhole. Predictably, there wasn't a trace of the witch's swords, and the commandant of the guard, still annoyed with Geralt, pointed out to them a filing spike where the deceased had kept the completed deposit slips. The witches were soon found among them. The commandant searched through the stack, thrusting it under his nose a moment later.
"There you go," she pointed triumphantly. "It's here in black and white, signed Girland of Riblier. Told you the Witcher had been here and took his swords away. And now he's lying, no doubt to claim damages. Gonskirk turned his toes up thanks to him. His gallbladder erupted from the worry and his heart gave out."
But neither she nor any of the other guards elected to testify that any of them had actually seen Geralt collect his weapons. The explanation was that
there's always someone hanging around here, and they'd been busy eating.
Seagulls circled over the roof of the court, uttering ear-splitting screeches. The wind had blown the storm cloud southwards over the sea. The sun was out.
"May I warn you in advance," said Geralt, "that my swords are protected by powerful spells. Only witches can touch them. Others will have their vitality drained away. It mainly manifests in the loss of male potency. I'm talking about sexual enfeeblement, absolute and permanent."
"We shall bear that in mind," the instigator nodded. "For the moment, though, I would ask you not to leave the city. I'm inclined to turn a blind eye to the brawl in the guardhouse. In any case, they occur there regularly. The guards are pretty volatile, and because Julian, I mean Lord Dandelion, vouches for you, I'm certain that your case will be satisfactorily solved in court."
"My case," the Witcher squinted his eyes, "is nothing but harassment. Intimidation resulting from prejudice and hatred.
The evidence will be examined."
The instigator cut him off. "And measures taken based on it. That is what law and order decrees. The same law and order that granted you your liberty, on bail and thus conditionally. You ought, Lord Rivia, to respect those caveats."
Who paid the bail?
Ferron de Lettenhover coldly declined to reveal the identity of the witch's benefactor, bowed farewell, and headed towards the entrance to the court, accompanied by his servants. It was just what Dandelion had been waiting for. Scarcely had they exited the town square and entered a narrow street than he revealed everything he knew.
It's a genuine catalogue of unfortunate coincidences, Geralt, my dear, and unlucky incidents. And as far as the bail is concerned, it was paid for you by a certain Litanaire, known to her friends as Coral, from the colour of the lipstick she uses. She's a sorceress who works for Belerne, the local kinglet. Everybody's racking their brains wondering why she did it, because it was none other than she who sent you down.
What?
Listen, will you? It was Coral who informed on you. That actually didn't surprise anyone. It's widely known that sorcerers have it in for you. And then, a bolt from the blue, the sorceress suddenly pays your bail and gets you out of the dungeon where you've been thrown because of her. The whole city, widely known. The whole city. What are you saying, Dandelion?
I'm using metaphors and circumlocution.
Don't pretend you don't know. You know me well enough. Naturally not the whole city, and only certain well-informed people among those close to the crown.
And you're one of them, I presume.
Correct. Ferron is my cousin, the son of my father's brother. I dropped in to visit him, as you would a relative, and I found out about your imbroglio. I immediately interceded for you. You can't possibly doubt that. I vouched for your honesty. I talked about Yennefer.
Thank you very much.
Drop the sarcasm. I had to talk about her to help my cousin realise that the local witch is maligning and slandering you out of jealousy and envy. That the entire accusation is false, that you never stoop to swindle people. As a result of my intercession, Ferron de Lettenhover, the royal instigator, a high-ranking legal executive, is now convinced of your innocence.
I didn't get that impression, said Geralt. Quite the opposite. I felt he didn't believe me, neither in the case of the alleged embezzlement nor in the case of the vanished swords. Did you hear what he said about evidence? Evidence is a fetish to him. The denunciation will thus be evidence of the fraud, and Gerland of Ribelier's signature on the docket is proof of the hoax involving the theft of the swords. Not to mention his expression when he was warning me against leaving the city.
You're being too hard on him, pronounced Dandelion. I know him better than you. That fact that I'm vouching for you is worth more than a dozen inflated pieces of evidence, and he was right to warn you. Why do you think both he and I headed to the guardhouse? To stop you from doing anything foolish. Someone, you say, is framing you, fabricating phony evidence? Then don't hand that someone irrefutable proof, which is what fleeing would be.
Perhaps you're right, agreed Geralt, but my instinct tells me otherwise. I ought to do a runner before they utterly corner me. First arrest, then bail, and then right after that, the swords. What next? Damn it! Without a sword, I feel like a snail without a shell.
I think you worry too much. And anyway, the place is full of shops. Forget about those swords and buy some more.
And if someone were to steal your loot, which was acquired, as I recall, in quite dramatic circumstances, wouldn't you worry? Would you let it slide and buy another in the shop around the corner?
Dandelion involuntarily tightened his grip on his loot, and his eyes swept around anxiously. However, none of the passers-by looked like a potential robber, nor displayed an unhealthy interest in his unique instrument.
"Well, yes," he sighed. "I understand. Like my loot, your swords are also unique and irreplaceable. And what's more, what were you saying? Enchanted? Triggering magical impotence? Damn it, Geralt. Now tell me. I mean, I've often spent time in your company. I've had those swords at arm's length. Sometimes closer. And now everything's clear. Now I get it. I've been having certain difficulties lately. Damn it.
Relax. That impotence thing was nonsense. I made it up on the spot, hoping the rumour would spread, that the thief would take fright.
If he takes fright, he's liable to bury the swords in a muck heap,
the bard noted, still slightly pale.
And you'll never get them back. Better to count on my cousin Ferron. He's been instigator for years, and has a whole army of sheriffs, agents and narcs. They'll find the thief in no time, you'll see.
Is the thief still here?
The Witcher ground his teeth.
He might have run for it while I was in the slammer.
What did you say was the name of that sorceress who landed me in this?
Litanair, nicknamed Coral.
I can guess what you're planning, my friend, but I don't think it's a good idea. She's a sorceress. An enchantress and a woman in one. In a word, an alien species that doesn't submit to rational understanding and functions according to mechanisms and principles incomprehensible to ordinary men. Why am I telling you this anyway? You know it very well. You have indeed a very rich experience in this matter.
What's that racket?
Aimlessly wandering through the streets, they had ended up in the vicinity of a small square resounding with a ceaseless banging of hammers. There was a large cooper's workshop there, it turned out. Cords of seasoned planks were piled up evenly beneath an awning by the street. From there, the planks were carried by barefoot youngsters to tables where they were attached to special trestles and shaped using draw knives. The carved staves went to other craftsmen, who finished them on long planing benches, standing astride them up to their ankles in shavings. The completed staves ended up in the hands of the coopers who assembled them. Geralt watched for a while, as the shape of the barrel emerged under the pressure of ingenious vices and clamps tightened by screws. Metal hoops hammered onto the staves then created the form of the barrel. Vapour from the large coppers where the barrels were being steamed belched right out into the street. The smell of wood being toasted in a fire. The barrels were being hardened before the next stage in the process drifted from the courtyard into the workshop.
"Whenever I see a barrel," Dandelion declared, "I feel like a beer. Let's go around the corner. I know a pleasant inn."
"Go by yourself. I'm visiting the sorceress. I think I know which one she is. I've already seen her. Where will I find her?"
"Don't make faces, Dandelion.
She, it would seem, is the original source and cause of my troubles. I'm not going to wait for things to develop. I'll go and ask her directly. I can't hang around in this town, if only for the reason that I'm rather skint."
"We shall find a remedy for that," the troubadour said proudly. "I shall support you financially."
"Geralt, what's going on?"
"Go back to the cooper's and bring me a stave."
"What?"
"Fetch me a stave, quickly."
The street had been barred by three powerful-looking bruisers with ugly, unshaven and unwashed mugs. One of them, so broad-shouldered he was almost square, held a metal-tipped club as thick as a capstan bar. The second, in a sheepskin coat with a fur on the outside, was holding a cleaver and had a boarding axe in his belt. The third, as swarthy as a mariner, was armed with a long, hideous-looking knife.
"Hey, you there, Rivian bastard," began the square-shaped man. "How do you feel without any swords on your back? Bare-arsed in the wind, eh?"
Geralt didn't join in the discourse. He waited. He heard Dandelion arguing with a cooper about his stave.
"You're toothless now, you freak, you venomous witcher toad," continued the square-shaped man,
clearly the most expert of the three in the oratory arts.
"No one's afraid of a reptile without fangs, for it's nothing but a worm or a slimy lamprey. We put filth like that under our boots and crush it to a pulp so it don't dare to come into our towns among decent people no more. You won't foul our streets with your slime, you reptile. Have at him, boys.
Geralt, catch!"
He caught the stave Dandelion threw to him, dodged a blow from the club, smashed the square-shaped man in the side of the head, spun around and slammed it into the elbow of the thug in the sheepskin, who yelled and dropped the cleaver. The witcher hit him behind the knees, knocking him down, and then, in passing, struck him on the temple with the stave. Without waiting until the thug fell down, or interrupting his own movement, he ducked under the square-shaped man's club and slammed him over the fingers clenched around it. The square-shaped man howled in pain and dropped the club, and Geralt struck him in turn on the right ear, the ribs and the left ear, and then kicked him hard in the crotch. The square-shaped man fell over and rolled into a ball, cringing and curling up, his forehead touching the ground. The swarthy one, the most agile and quickest of the three, danced around the witcher. Deftly tossing his knife from hand to hand, he attacked on bent legs, slashing diagonally. Geralt easily avoided the blows, stepped back and waited for him to lengthen his strides. And when that happened, he knocked the knife away with a sweeping blow of the stave, circled the assailant with a pirouette, and slammed him in the back of the head. The knifeman fell to his knees, and the witcher whacked him in the right kidney. The man howled and tensed up, and the witcher bashed him with the stave below the ear, striking a nerve. one known to physicians as the parotid plexus.
"Oh, dear,"
said Geralt, standing over the man, who was curled up, retching and choking on his screams.
"That must have hurt."
The thug in the sheepskin coat drew the axe from his belt, but didn't get up from his knees, uncertain what to do. Geralt dispelled his doubts, smashing him over the back of the neck with the stave. The fellows from the town guard came running along the street, jostling the gathering crowd of onlookers. Dandelion pacified them, citing his connections, frantically explaining who had been the assailant and who had acted in self-defense. The witcher gestured the bard over.
"See that the bastards are tied up. Persuade your cousin, the instigator, to give them a hard time. They either had a hand in stealing the swords themselves or somebody hired them. They knew I was unarmed, which is why they dared to attack. Give the coopers back their stave."
"I had to buy it," admitted Dandelion. "And I think I did the right thing. You wield a mean plank, I can see. You should pack one all the time."
"I'm going to the sorceress to pay her a visit. Shall I take the stave?"
"Something heavier would come in useful with a sorceress." The bard grimaced. "A fence post, for example. A philosopher acquaintance of mine used to say, when visiting a woman, never forget to take a dandelion."
"Very well, very well. I'll give you the directions to the witch. But first, if I might advise..."
"Yes!" "Visit a bathhouse and a barber." Guard against disappointments, because appearances can deceive. Things that are really as they seem are rare, and a woman is never as she seems. Dandelion, Half a Century of Poetry. Chapter 5. The water in the fountain swirled and boiled, spraying small golden drops around. Litanir, known as Coral, a sorceress, held out her hand and chanted a stabilizing charm. The water became as smooth as though oil had been poured over it, and pulsated with glimmers of light. The image, at first vague and nebulous, became sharper and stopped shimmering, and although slightly distorted by the movement of the water, was distinct and clear. Coral leaned over. She saw the spice market, the city's main street in the water, and a white-haired man crossing it. The sorceress stared, observed, searched for clues, some kind of details, details that would enable her to make the appropriate evaluation, and allow her to predict what would happen. Litter had a tried and tested opinion, formed by years of experience of what constituted a real man. She knew how to recognize a real man in a flock of more or less successful imitations. In order to do that, she did not have to resort to physical contact, a method of testing manhood she considered, like the majority of sorceresses, not just trivial, but also misleading and liable to lead one astray. Savoring them directly, as her attempts had proven, was perhaps some indication of taste, but all too often left a bitter aftertaste, indigestion, and heartburn, and even vomiting. Litter was able to recognize a real man even at a distance, on the basis of trifling and, apparently, insignificant criteria. A real man, the sorceress knew from experience, is an enthusiastic angler, but only using a fly. He collects military figures, erotic prints and models of sailing ships he builds himself, including the kind in bottles, and there is never a shortage of empty bottles of expensive alcoholic drinks in his home. He is an excellent cook, able to conjure up veritable culinary masterpieces, and, well, when all's said and done, the very sight of him is enough to make one desirous. The witcher Geralt, about whom the sorceress had heard a great deal, about whom she had acquired much information, and whom she was right then observing in the fountain, met but one of the above conditions, it appeared.
"Muzak?"
"Yes, madam."
"We're going to have a guest. Everything is to be suitably prepared and elegant. But first, bring me a gown."
"The tea rose, or the aquamarine?"
"The white one. He dresses in black. We'll treat him to yin and yang. And sandals. Select something matching. Make sure they have at least 4-inch heels. I can't let him look down on me too much."
"Madam, that white gown..."
"Yes?"
"It's, well,
modest, without any ornamentations or furbelows."
"Oh, Muzak,
Motsyke, will you ever learn?
He was met in the doorway by a burly and pot-bellied bruiser with a broken nose and little piggy eyes, who searched Geralt from head to toe, and then once again the other way. Then he stood back, giving a sign for the Witcher to pass. A girl with smoothly combed, almost slicked down hair, was waiting in the anteroom. She invited him in with a gesture, without uttering a single word. He entered straight onto a patio dotted with flowers and a splashing fountain in the centre. In the middle of the fountain stood a small marble statue portraying a naked dancing girl. Apart from the fact that it was sculpted by a master, the statue was conspicuous for another detail. It was attached to the plinth at a single point, the big toe of one foot. In no way, judged the Witcher, could the construction be stable without the help of magic.
Geralt of Rivia, welcome. Do come in.
The sorceress Litanair was too sharp-featured to be considered classically beautiful. The warm peach shade of rouge on her cheekbones softened the sharpness, but couldn't hide it. Her lips, highlighted by coral red lipstick, were so perfectly shaped as to be too perfect. But that wasn't what mattered. Litanair was a redhead, a classic, natural redhead. Her hair's mellow, light russet evoked associations with a fox's summer coat. If one were to catch a red fox and place it alongside her, Geralt was quite convinced about this. The two of them would prove to be identically coloured and indistinguishable from each other. And when the sorceress moved her head, lighter, yellowish accents lit up among the red, identical to a fox's fur. That type of red hair was usually accompanied by freckles, usually in excess. That wasn't the case with Litter. Geralt felt an anxiety, forgotten and dormant, suddenly awaking somewhere deep inside him. He had a strange and inexplicable inclination towards redheads in his nature, and several times that particular colouring had made him do stupid things. Thus, he ought to be on his guard, and the Witcher made a firm resolution in that regard. His task was actually made easier. It was almost a year since he'd stopped being tempted by that kind of stupid mistake. Erotically alluring red hair wasn't the sorceress's only attractive attribute. Her snow-white dress was modest and utterly without effects, which was the aim, the intended aim, and without the slightest doubt deliberate. Its simplicity didn't distract the attention of the observer, but focused it on her attractive figure and the plunging cleavage. To put it concisely, Litanair could easily have posed for an engraving accompanying the chapter Impure Desire in the illustrated edition of the Prophet Lebioda's Good Book. To put it even more concisely, Litanair was a woman whom only a complete idiot would have wanted to have relations with for longer than 2 days. It was curious that women like that were usually pursued by hordes of men inclined to stay for much longer. She smelled of freesias and apricots. Geralt bowed, and then pretended the statue in the fountain was more interesting than her figure and cleavage.
"Come in," repeated Litha, pointing at a malachite-topped table and 2 wicker armchairs.
She waited for him to sit down, then, as she was taking her place, showed off a shapely calf and a lizard-skin sandal. The Witcher pretended his entire attention was absorbed by the carafes and fruit bowl.
"Wine? It's Nuragus from Toussaint. In my opinion, more compelling than the overrated Est. There is also Cor de Blessure, if you prefer red. Pour, please, Mozaik."
"Thank you."
He took a goblet from the girl with the slicked-down hair and smiled at her.
"Mozaik, pretty name."
He saw terror in her eyes. Litanair placed her goblet on the table, with a bang meant to focus his attention.
"What brings the celebrated Geralt of Rivia to my humble abode?"
She tossed her shock of red curls.
"I'm dying to find out."
"You bought me out," he said, deliberately coolly. "Paid my bail, I mean. I was released from jail thanks to your munificence. Where I also ended up because of you, right? Is it because of you I spent a week in a cell?"
"4 days."
"4 days. I'd like to learn, if possible, the motives behind those actions. Both of them."
Both?
She raised her eyebrows and her goblet.
There's one, and only one.
Oh? He pretended to be devoting all his attention to Mutzayik, who was busying herself on the other side of the patio.
So you informed on me and got me thrown into the clink, and then got me out for the same reason.
Bravo.
So, I ask, why?
To show you I can.
He took a sip of wine, which was indeed very good.
You proved that you can. He nodded. In principle, you could have simply told me that, by meeting me in the street, for instance. I would have believed it. You preferred to do it differently, and forcibly. So I ask, what now?
I'm wondering myself.
She looked at him rapaciously from under her eyelashes.
But let's leave things to take their own course. In the meantime, let's say I'm acting on behalf of several of my confrères, sorcerers who have certain plans regarding you. These sorcerers, who are familiar with my diplomatic talents, chose me as the right person to inform you about their plans. For the moment, that is all I can disclose to you.
That's very little.
You're right. But for the moment, I'm ashamed to admit, I don't know any more myself. I didn't expect you to show up so quickly. Didn't expect you to discover so quickly who paid your bail, which was, they assured me, to have remained a secret. When I know more, I shall reveal more. Be patient.
And the matter of my sword? Is that part of the game? Of the plans of those mysterious sorcerers? Or is that further proof of your capabilities?
I don't know anything about the matter of your swords, whatever it might mean or concern.
He wasn't entirely convinced, but he didn't delve further into the subject.
Your confrere sorcerers have recently been trying to outdo each other in showing me antipathy and hostility, he said. They've fallen over one another to antagonize me and make my life difficult. I expect to find their interfering fingerprints in every misadventure that befalls me. It's a catalogue of unfortunate coincidences. They throw me into jail, then release me, then communicate that they have plans for me. What will your confrères dream up this time? I'm afraid even to speculate. And you order me to be patient, most diplomatically, I admit. But I don't have a choice. After all, I have to wait until a case triggered by that tip-off comes before the court.
But meanwhile, the sorceress smiled, you can take full advantage of your liberty and enjoy its benefits. You have been released pending trial. If the case comes before the court at all, which isn't by any means certain, and even if it does, you don't have any reason to be anxious, believe me. Trust me.
Trust may come a bit harder, he retorted with a smile. The actions of your confrères in recent times have severely taxed my trust. But I shall try hard. And now I shall be on my way, to trust and wait patiently. Good day.
Don't go yet. Stay a while longer.
Mutzayik, wine.
She changed her position on the chair. The Witcher continued to stubbornly pretend he couldn't see her knee and thigh in the spit of her skirt.
Oh, well, she said a moment later. There's no point beating about the bush. Witches have never been highly thought of in our circles, so it suffices to ignore you, at least up to a certain moment.
Until, he'd had enough of fudging, I embarked on a romance with Yennefer.
No, you're mistaken.
She fixed eyes the colour of jade on him.
Twice over, actually.
Primo, you didn't embark on a romance with Yennefer, but she with you.
Secundo, the liaison didn't shock many of us. We're no strangers to excesses of that kind. The turning point was your parting. When did it happen? A year ago? Oh, how time flies.
She made a dramatic pause, counting on a reaction from him.
Exactly a year ago, she continued, when it became clear there would be no reaction. Some members of our community, not many, but influential, deigned to notice you. No one was clear what precisely occurred between you. Some of us thought that Yennefer, after coming to her senses, broke off with you and kicked you out.
Others dared to suppose that you, after seeing through her, ditched her and took to your heels. Consequently, as I mentioned, you became the object of interest. And, as you correctly guessed, antipathy. Why, there were those who wanted you punished in some way. Fortunately for you, the majority thought it not worth the trouble.
What about you? What part of the community do you belong to?
Those whom your love affair merely entertained, if you can imagine. Lita twisted her coral lips, and occasionally amused, and occasionally supplied with true spotting thrills. I personally have to thank you for a significant influx of cash, Witcher. Bets were laid about how long you'd last with Yennefer. The stakes were high. My wager, as it turned out, was the most accurate, and I scooped up the pot.
In that case, it'd be better if I went. I oughtn't to visit you. We oughtn't to be seen together. People are liable to think we fixed the bet.
Does it bother you what they're liable to think?
Not a lot. And I'm delighted with your win. I'd planned to refund you the 500 crowns you put up as bail, but since you scooped up the pot betting on me, I no longer feel obliged. Let's call it quits.
I hope the mention of refunding the bail doesn't betray a plan to escape and flee, without waiting for the court case. An evil gleam appeared in Litanaire's green eyes. No, no, you don't have any such intention. You can't have. You know, I'm sure that it would send you back into the slammer. You do know that, don't you?
You don't have to prove to me you can do it.
I prefer not to have to. I mean that most sincerely. She placed her hand on her cleavage, with the clear intention of drawing his gaze there. He pretended not to notice, and shifted his eyes towards Mutsaic again. Lita cleared her throat. With regard to settling up or sharing out the winnings from the wager, she said, you're actually right. You deserve it. I wouldn't dare to offer you money. But what would you say to unlimited credit at the Natura Rerum? For the time you stay here. Because of me, your last visit ended before it began. So now...
No, thank you. I appreciate your willingness and good intentions, but no, thank you.
Are you sure? Why? You must be. I needlessly mentioned sending you to the slammer. You provoked me and beguiled me. Your eyes, those strange, mutated eyes, so apparently sincere, endlessly wander and beguile. You aren't sincere, not at all. I know that's a compliment coming from a sorceress. You were about to say so, weren't you?
Touché.
And would you be capable of sincerity, if I demanded it of you?
If you were to ask for it.
Oh, let it be. So, I ask you. Why Yennefer? Why her, and no one else? Could you explain it? Name it.
If this is another wager,
it's not. Why exactly Yennefer of Vengerberg?
Mutsaic appeared like a wraith, with a fresh carafe and biscuits.
Geralt looked her in the eyes.
She turned her head away at once.
Why Yennefer?
He repeated, staring at Mutsaic.
Why her, precisely? I'll answer frankly. I don't know myself. There are certain women. One look is enough.
Mutsaic opened her mouth and shook her head gently, in terror. She knew and was begging him to stop. But he'd already gone too far into the game.
Some women attract you like a magnet, he said,
his eyes continuing to wander over the girl's figure.
You can't take your eyes off them.
Leave us, Mutsaic!
The sound of pack ice grating against iron could be heard in Litter's voice.
And to you, get out of Rivia, my thanks for the visit, for your patience, and for your sincerity.
A witcher's sword,
distinguishes itself by being, as it were, an amalgam of other sorts, the fifth essence of what is best in other weapons. The first-rate steel and manner of forging typical of dwarven foundries and smithies lend the blade lightness, but also extraordinary resilience. A witcher sword is also sharpened in the dwarven fashion, a secret fashion, we may add, and one that shall remain secret forever, for the mountain dwarves guard their arts jealously. For a sword whetted by dwarves can cut in two a silken scarf thrown into the air. We know from the accounts of eyewitnesses that witches were able to accomplish the same trick with their swords. Pandolfo Forteguera, A Treatise on Edged Weapons. Chapter 6. A fleeting morning rainstorm freshened the air for a short time, after which the stench of refuse, burnt fat and rotting fish borne on the breeze from Palmyra, once again became noisome. Dandelion put Geralt up at the inn. The room the bard was occupying was cosy, in the literal sense. They had to cosy up to pass each other. Fortunately, the bed was big enough for two and was serviceable, although it creaked dreadfully, and the paillasse had been compacted by travelling merchants, well-known enthusiasts of ardent extramarital sex. Geralt, God knew why, dreamed of Litanaire during the night. They went to break their fast at the nearby market hall, where the bard had previously discovered that excellent sardines were to be had. Dandelion was treating him, which didn't inconvenience Geralt. After all, it had quite often been the other way around, with Dandelion taking advantage of Geralt's generosity when he was skint. So they sat at a roughly planed table and got down to crisply fried sardines, brought to them on a wooden platter as large as a barrow wheel. Dandelion looked around fearfully from time to time, the witcher observed, and froze when it seemed to him that some passerby was scrutinizing them too persistently. "You ought, think I, to get yourself some sort of weapon," Dandelion finally muttered, "and carry it in plain sight. It's worth learning from yesterday's incident, don't you think? Oh, look, do you see those shields and mail shirts on display? That's an armourer's. They're bound to have swords there, too. Weapons are prohibited in this town." Geralt picked a sardine's spine clean and spat out a fin. "Visitors' weapons are confiscated. It looks as though only bandits can stroll around here armed."
"Perhaps they can."
The bard nodded towards a passing ruffian with a long battle-axe on his shoulder. "But in Kerak, the prohibitions are issued, enforced, and punished for contravention by Ferron de Lettenhover, who is, as you know, my cousin. And since the old boy network is a sacred law of nature, we can make light of the local prohibitions. We are, I hereby state, entitled to possess and carry arms. Let's finish breakfasting and go and buy you a blade."
"Good mistress, these fish are excellent. Please fry another dozen."
"As I eat these sardines, I realise that the loss of the swords was nothing but a punishment for my greed and snobbism."
Geralt threw away a well-chewed sardine skeleton.
"For wanting a little luxury. Work came up in the vicinity, so I decided to drop into Kerak and feast at the Natura Rerum Tavern, the talk of the town. While there were places I could have eaten tripe, cabbage and peas, or fish soup.
Incidentally,"
Dandelion licked his fingers,
"the Natura Rerum, although justly famous for its board, is only one of many. There are restaurants where the food is no worse and possibly even better. For instance, the Saffron and Pepper in Gorsvelen, or the Hen Serbin in Novigrad, which has its own brewery, or alternatively the nearby Sonatina in Sidaris, with the best seafood on the entire coast. The Rivoli in Maribor, and their Cap at Cayley a la Broccolon, heavily larded with pork fat. Heavenly! The Feu de Moline in Aldersburg, and their celebrated saddle of hare with morels, a la King Widemont. The Hofmeyer in Hirundum. Oh, to pay a call there in the autumn, after sawing, for roast goose in pear sauce. Or the Two Weatherfish, a few miles outside Ardcurra, an ordinary tavern on the crossroads, serving the best pork knuckle I've ever eaten. Why, look who's coming to see us. Talk of the devil. Greetings, Ferron. I mean, my lord instigator."
Ferron de Lettenhover approached alone, gesturing to his servants to remain in the street.
"Julian, Lord Rivier, I come with tidings." "I don't deny that I'm getting impatient," responded Geralt. "How did the criminals testify? The ones who attacked me yesterday, exploiting the fact that I was unarmed. They spoke of it quite loudly and openly. It's proof they had a hand in the theft of my swords."
"There is no evidence of that, unfortunately." The instigator shrugged. "The three prisoners are typical rapscallions, and on top of that, slow-witted. They carried out the assault, it's true, emboldened by your not having a weapon. Rumours about the theft spread incredibly swiftly, thanks, it would seem, to the ladies from the guardhouse. And at once there were willing people. Which is actually not too surprising. You aren't especially liked, nor do you seek to be liked or popular. When in custody, you committed an assault on your fellow prisoners.
That's right.
The Witcher nodded.
It's all my fault.
Yesterday's assailants also sustained injuries. Didn't they complain? Didn't ask for compensation? Dandelion laughed, but fell silent at once.
The witnesses to yesterday's incident, said Ferrand de Lettenhover tartly, testified that the three men were thrashed with a cooper's stave and beaten extremely severely, so severely that one of them soiled himself.
Probably from excitement.
They were beaten even after being incapacitated and no longer posing a threat.
The instigator's expression didn't change,
meaning that the limits of necessary defence were exceeded.
I'm not worried. I have a good lawyer.
A sardine, perhaps?
Dandelion interrupted the heavy silence.
I inform you that the investigation is underway, the instigator finally said. The men arrested yesterday are not mixed up in the theft of the swords. Several people who may have participated in the crime have been questioned, but no evidence has been found. Informers were unable to indicate any leads. It is known, though, and this is the main reason I'm here, that the rumour about the swords has stirred up a commotion in the local underworld. Even strangers have appeared, keen to square up to a witcher, particularly an unarmed one. I thus recommend vigilance. I cannot exclude further incidents. I'm also certain, Julian, that in this situation, to accompany the Lord Rivier,
I have accompanied Geralt in much more hazardous places, in predicaments that the local hoodlums could not imagine,
the troubadour interrupted combatively.
Provide us with an armed escort, cousin, if you regard it as appropriate. Let it act as a deterrent. Otherwise, when Geralt and I give the next bunch of dregs a good hiding, they'll be bellyaching about the limits of the necessary defence being overstepped.
If they are indeed dregs and not paid hitmen, hired by someone, said Geralt. Is the investigation also paying attention to that?
All eventualities are being taken into consideration, Ferrand de Lettenhover cut him off. The investigation will continue. I shall assign an escort.
We're grateful.
Farewell. I wish you good luck.
Seagulls screeched above the city's rooftops. They might just as well not have bothered with the visit to the armourer. All Geralt needed was a glance over the swords on offer. When, though, he found out the prices, he shrugged and exited the shop without a word.
I thought we understood each other.
Dandelion joined him in the street.
You were supposed to buy any old thing so as not to look unarmed.
I won't throw away money on any old thing, even if it's your money. That was junk, Dandelion. Primitive, mass-produced swords, and little decorative rapiers for courtiers, fit for a masked ball, if you mean to dress up as a swordsman. A price to make you burst out in insane laughter.
We'll find another shop, or workshop.
It'll be the same everywhere. There's a market for cheap, poor-quality weapons that are meant to serve in one decent brawl, and not to serve the victors either, for when they're collected from the battlefield, they're already useless. And there's a market for shiny ornaments that dandies can parade with, which you can't even slice a sausage with, unless it's a liver sausage.
You're exaggerating as usual.
Coming from you, that's a compliment.
It wasn't intended. So where, pray tell me, do we get a good sword?
No worse than the ones that were stolen, or better.
There exist, to be sure, masters of the swordsmith's art. Perhaps one of them might even have a decent blade in stock. But I have to have a sword that's fitted to my hand, forged and finished to order. And that takes a few months, or even a year. I don't have that much time.
But you have to get yourself some sort of sword, the bard observed soberly. And pretty urgently, I'd say. What's left? Perhaps,
he lowered his voice and looked around.
Perhaps, Kaer Morhen?
There are sure to be, certainly, Geralt interrupted, clenching his jaw. To be sure, there are still enough blades, a wide choice including silver ones. But it's too far away, and barely a day goes by without a storm and a downpour. The rivers are swollen and the roads softened. The ride would take me a month. Apart from that,
he angrily kicked a tattered punnet someone had thrown away.
I was robbed, Dandelion. outwitted and robbed like a complete sucker. Vizimir would mock me mercilessly. My comrades, if I happened upon them in the keep, would also have fun. They'd rib me for years. No, it's out of the bloody question. I have to sort this out some other way, and by myself.
They heard a pipe and a drum. They entered a small square where the vegetable market was taking place, and a group of goliards were performing. It was the morning repertoire, meaning primitively stupid and not at all amusing. Dandelion walked among the stalls, where with admirable and astonishing expertise, he immediately took up the assessment and tasting of the cucumbers, beetroots and apples displayed on the counters, all the while bantering and flirting with the market traders.
"Sauerkraut,"
he declared, scooping some from a barrel using wooden tongs.
"Try it, Geralt. Excellent, isn't it? It's a tasty and salutary thing, cabbage like this. In winter, when vitamins are lacking, it protects one from scurvy. It is, furthermore, a splendid antidepressant."
"How so?"
"You eat a big pot of sauerkraut, drink a jug of sour milk, and, soon afterwards, depression becomes the least of your worries. You forget about depression, sometimes for a long time. Who are you staring at? Who's that girl?"
"An acquaintance. Wait here. I'll have a brief word with her and I'll be back."
The girl he'd spotted was Mosaic, whom he'd met at Litanera's. The sorceress's shy pupil with the slicked-down hair in a modest, though elegant, dress the colour of rosewood, and cork wedge-heeled shoes in which she moved quite gracefully, bearing in mind the slippery vegetable scraps covering the uneven, cobbled street. He approached, surprising her by a stall of tomatoes as she filled a basket hanging from the crook of her arm.
"Greetings."
She blanched slightly on seeing him, despite her already pale complexion, and had it not been for the stall, she would have taken a step or two back. She made a movement as though trying to hide the basket behind her back. No, not the basket. Her hand. She was hiding her forearm and hand, which were tightly wrapped up in a silk scarf. He noticed her behaviour, and an inexplicable impulse made him take action. He grabbed the girl's hand.
"Let go,"
she whispered, trying to break free.
"Show me. I insist."
"Not here."
She let him lead her away from the market to somewhere they could be alone. He unwound the scarf and couldn't contain himself. He swore, crudely and at great length. The girl's left hand was turned over, twisted at the wrist. The thumb stuck out to the left. The back of her hand was facing downwards and the palm upwards. A long, regular lifeline, he noticed involuntarily. The heart line was distinct, but dotted and broken.
"Who did that to you? Did she?"
"You did."
"What?"
"You did."
She jerked her hand away.
"You used me to make a fool of her. She doesn't let something like that slide."
"I couldn't have predicted it."
She looked him in the eyes. He had misjudged her. She was neither timid nor anxious.
"You could and should have, but you preferred to play with fire. Was it worth it, though? Did it give you satisfaction, make you feel better, give you something to boast about to your friends in the tavern?"
He didn't answer. He couldn't find the words. But Mosaic, to his astonishment, suddenly smiled.
"I don't bear a grudge," she said easily. "Your game amused me, and I'd have laughed if I hadn't been afraid. Give me back the basket, I'm in a hurry. I still have shopping to do, and I've got an appointment at the alchemist's."
"Wait, you can't leave it like that."
"Please."
Mutzayek's voice changed slightly.
"Don't get involved. You'll only make it worse. I got away with it anyway," she added a moment later. "She treated me leniently."
"Leniently?"
"She might have turned both my hands over. She might have twisted my foot around, heel facing forward. She might have swapped my feet over, left to right and vice versa. I've seen her do that to somebody."
"Did it
hurt?" "Briefly, because I passed out almost at once." "Why are you staring like that?"
"That's how it was.
I hope it'll be the same when she twists my hand back again, in a few days after she's enjoyed her revenge."
"I'm going to see her right away."
"Bad idea. You can't..."
He interrupted her with a rapid gesture. He heard the crowd buzzing and saw it disperse. The goliards had stopped playing. He saw Dandelion at a distance, giving him sudden and desperate signals.
"Yo!
Wetcher Felth, I challenge you to a duel. We shall fight.
Damn it. Move aside, Mutsai.
A short and stocky character, in a leather mask and a cuirass of boiled oxhide, stepped out of the crowd. The character shook the trident he was holding, and with a sudden movement of his left hand, unfurled a fishing net in the air, flourished, and shook it.
I am Tonton Zroger, known as the Retiarius. I challenge you to a fight with...
Geralt raised his hand and struck him with the Ard sign, putting as much power into it as he could. The crowd yelled. Tonton Zroger, known as the Retiarius, flew into the air and, entangled in his own net and kicking his legs, wiped out a bagel stall, crashed heavily onto the ground, and with a loud clank, slammed his head against the small cast-iron statue of a squatting gnome, which, for no apparent reason, stood in front of a shop offering haberdashery. The Goliards rewarded the flight with thunderous applause. The Retiarius lay on the ground, alive, but displaying fairly feeble signs of consciousness. Geralt, not hurrying, walked over and kicked him hard in the region of the liver. Someone seized him by the sleeve. It was Motsaic.
No, please, please don't. You can't do that.
Geralt would have continued kicking the net fighter, because he knew quite well what you can't do, what you can, and what you must do. And he wasn't in the habit of heeding anyone in such matters, especially people who had never been beaten up.
Please, Motsaic repeated, don't take it out on him. For me. Because of her. And because you've mixed everything up.
He did as she asked, then took her by the arms and looked her in the eyes.
I'm going to see your mistress, he declared firmly.
That's not good.
She shook her head.
There'll be consequences.
For you?
No. Not for me.
Chapter 7. The sorceress's hip was graced by an intricate tattoo with fabulously colourful details, depicting a fish with coloured stripes.
Nil admirari, thought the Witcher. Nil admirari.
I don't believe my eyes, said Litanir.
He, and he alone, was to blame for what happened, and for it happening as it happened. On the way to the sorceress's villa, he had passed a garden and couldn't resist the temptation of picking a freesia from a flower bed. He remembered it being the predominant scent of her perfume.
I don't believe my eyes, said Litanir.
She greeted him in person. The burly porter wasn't there. Perhaps it was his day off.
You've come, I guess, to give me a dressing down from Atzaik's hand. And you've brought me a flower. A white freesia. Come in before there's a sensation and the city explodes with rumours. A man on my threshold with a flower. This never happens.
She was wearing a loose-fitting black dress, a combination of silk and chiffon, very sheer and rippling with every movement of the air. The Witcher stood, staring, the freesia still in his outstretched hand, wanting to smile, and not for all the world able to.
Nil admirari.
He repeated in his head, the maxim he remembered from a cartouche over the entrance to the philosophy faculty of the University of Oxenfurt. He had been repeating it all the way to Litter's villa.
Don't shout at me.
She snatched the freesia from his fingers.
I'll fix the girl's hand as soon as she appears. Painlessly. I'll possibly even apologize to her. I apologize to you. Just don't shout at me.
He shook his head, trying not to smile again. Unsuccessfully.
I wonder.
She brought the freesia up to her face and fixed her jade-coloured eyes on it.
If you know the symbolism of flowers and their secret language,
do you know what this freesia is saying and therefore you're communicating it to me quite conscious?
Or perhaps the flower is purely accidental and the message subconscious?
Nil admirari.
But it's meaningless anyway.
She came up to him, very close.
For either you're openly, consciously, and calculatingly signalling to me what you desire, or you're concealing the desire your subconscious is betraying. In both cases I owe you thanks. For the flower, and for what it says. Thank you.
And I'll return the favour. I'll also present you with something. There. That drawstring. Pull it. Don't be shy.
That's what I do best, he thought, as he pulled.
The woven drawstring slid smoothly from embroidered holes, all the way, and then the silk and chiffon dress flowed from litter like water, gathering itself around her ankles ever so softly. He closed his eyes for a moment, her nakedness dazzling him like a sudden flash of light.
What am I doing? He thought,
putting his arm around her neck.
What am I doing?
He thought, tasting the coral red lipstick on his mouth.
What I'm doing is completely senseless, he thought,
gently leading her towards a bureau by the patio and placing her on the malachite top. She smelled of freesias and apricots, and something else. Tangerines, perhaps. Lemongrass, perhaps. It lasted some time, and towards the end, the bureau was rocking quite violently. Coral, although she was gripping him tight, didn't once release the freesia from her fingers. The flower's fragrance didn't suppress hers.
Your enthusiasm is flattering.
She pulled her mouth away from his and opened her eyes.
And very complimentary. But I do have a bed, you know.
Indeed, she did have a bed. An enormous one, as large as the deck of a frigate. She led him there, and he followed her, unable to take his eyes off her. She didn't look back. She had no doubt that he was following her, that he would go without hesitation where she led him, without ever taking his eyes off her. The bed was huge and had a canopy. The bed linen was of silk and the sheets of satin. It's no exaggeration to say they made use of the entire bed, of every single inch, every inch of the bed linen, and every fold of the sheets.
Litter, you may call me Coral, but for the time being don't say anything.
Nil admirare.
The scent of freesias and apricots, her red hair strewn across the pillow.
Litter, you may call me Coral, and you may do that to me again.
The sorceress's hip was graced by an intricate tattoo with fabulously colourful details, depicting a fish with coloured stripes, its large fins giving it a triangular shape. Fish like that, called angelfish, were usually kept in aquariums and basins by wealthy people and the snobbish nouveau riche. So Geralt, and he wasn't the only one, had always associated them with snobbism and pretentious ostentation. Thus it astonished him that Coral had chosen that particular tattoo. The astonishment lasted a moment, and the explanation came quickly. Litanair both looked and seemed quite young. But the tattoo dated back to the years of her real youth, from the times when angelfish brought from abroad were indeed a rare attraction, when there were few wealthy people, when the nouveau riche were still making their fortunes and few could afford an aquarium.
So her tattoo is like a birth certificate, thought Geralt,
caressing the angelfish with his fingertips.
It's a wonder Litter still has it, rather than magically removing it.
Why? He thought, shifting his caresses to regions some distance from the fish.
A memory from one's youth is a lovely thing. It's not easy to get rid of such a memento, even if now it's passé and pompously banal.
He raised himself on an elbow and took a closer look, searching her body for other, equally nostalgic mementos. He didn't find any. He didn't expect to. He simply wanted to look. Coral sighed, clearly bored by the abstract and not very purposeful peregrinations of his hand. She seized it and decisively directed it to a specific place. In her opinion, the only suitable one.
Good for you, thought Geralt,
pulling the sorceress towards him and burying his face in her hair. Fiddlesticks to stripy fish, as though there weren't more vital things worth devoting one's attention to. or worth thinking about.
Perhaps model sailing ships too,
thought Coral chaotically, trying hard to control her rapid breathing.
Perhaps military fish.